Welcome all. If we have any new people with us tonight, I've pasted into the chat where you can join if you want to. Don't feel obliged to do so. We welcome guests. However, if you join before March 31st or by March 31st, you'll get 2 years for the price of one. So for the low, low price of $20, you'll get 2 years membership in the Ottawa PC user group. We always welcome people to join. And with that, I will turn it over to Alan to take us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So we're going to start with a follow-up from last week, I believe, when I was talking about making backups using ESOS to do backup. And Chris had mentioned that this 4 gigabyte limit on the file size of the disk image was likely due to the way that the disk was formatted. The target drive was formatted. And I did check, and he was in fact correct. My USB drive was formatted as FAT32, which has a limit of 4 gigabyte for an individual file. So the first full disk image got split across two different files. Second thing about ESOS to do, when February rolled around, I decided to create a new backup. So this local disk E was the backup task I was using for January's files. So I decided to click on add backup here, and it gives me this option to do a new backup. What I didn't realize earlier was that you can actually click on this new backup and give it a different name. So I decided I would call it 2024-02 February, so I know what month these backup files are going to belong with. So I made myself a new backup task, and then I can click on that to create a backup. And Tom will be glad to see that I now have 23 gigabytes of 28 gigabytes free. So I have actually used some space to store backup images previously. The interesting thing happened, you notice that I'm using my V drive again, Z images and ESOS as the backup folder, the target folder. Interesting enough, I found that when I look inside that folder, the subfolder, rather than being called local drive E, which it was previously, is now called 2024-02 February. So, in other words, the backup folder that ESOS to do creates actually uses the name of the backup task, and I didn't appreciate that earlier. So that's actually a good way to keep track of things. You can name the backup task the way that you'd like to store the backup images and keep track of everything very nicely. So I went back to local drive E, my first backup, and I renamed it so I have a consistent kind of modified date entry naming system for the various folders. So that's something I learned about ESOS to do backup. I guess one of these days I should read the manual and find out what it really does. Anyway, there we go. So onwards and not upwards, we have our computer basics item next, and this is for Chris.
I would encourage everybody to think about computer basics, because a lot of us have been using computers for a long time, but that's not to say that everything we do on our computers was necessarily intuitive and obvious when we first started using it. And maybe some of the newer people on the call will be able to take advantage of something you discovered over the years of computing that will make their life a lot easier. And that's our motto, is users helping users. So this was a quick one I just put together, fast paging on the web in a web browser. And the fastest way to page through a long page is just use a spacebar, and it will scroll down the page with overlap so that you don't lose your place. Next. So here we have a CBC news article, and you can see from the scroll bar on the right-hand side, it's a fairly long page. But you could use the mouse and drag down on that or various things. But if you just hit the spacebar, next, it'll scroll down one page with a bunch of overlap so that, again, you don't lose your place in it and the page. Next. And then if you hit the spacebar again, it'll go down another page. And I'll give you that overlap again. So very, very quick and easy way to scroll things. And as a bonus tip, if you hit the shift space, it'll actually scroll up. And not only in browser, a lot of Windows applications will actually do that as well. For example, a lot of mail programs, if you have a long email, hitting the spacebar will actually just move you down one page worth in the email. So if it's not in an editor mode where spacebar would actually be interpreted as a space, you could try that and see if it'll actually scroll through the page one page at a time. So again, if anybody else has something for computer basics, we would welcome your input to Q&A. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And just to give a slight modification on that, if people on the call need to know how to do something, all you have to do is ask a question, and we'll try to find the answer. So if no question is too basic for computer basics and Q&A. Okay, next up, we have a follow-up on the item on Intel Unison that Harvey gave us last week. And Jeff Dubois notes that he uses a product called Pulse SMS, which basically does the same kind of thing, providing connectivity between his smartphone and computer. And Jeff notes that he uses the Android app version on his phone and the Windows executable on the computer. And he notes that he tried Windows Phone, but he didn't find it very reliable. Whereas with the Pulse SMS, he says I can access text messages using a browser or with a browser extension. And he's been using this app since Windows 7, and it's still working just fine. So if you're interested in an Android text messaging app connecting to a PC, here's Pulse SMS for your availability and delight. So as Jeff noted, you can use a browser, or there are browser extensions available, and Jeff notes you can get those for both Brave and Firefox, and perhaps others. But Jeff basically just loads the Pulse SMS onto his PC and just lets it run in the background. And then if a text comes in on the phone, it immediately pops up on the computer screen. And I guess Jeff likes this app because he says he really, really, really likes the ability to schedule text messages. So he can actually use the computer to create a text and then schedule it to be sent by his phone on any date and time he's choosing. So that's kind of an optional extra that you see in Pulse SMS. So there you are. If you're interested in that kind of thing, Android smartphones and PCs, then there's an app that Jeff says does a fine job. Okay, moving along, Bob Harris has a share for us tonight on pinning things to the taskbar. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. I always have a hard time finding the apps I want to find in my Windows 11 issue. And I put a number of shortcuts on the desktop, and then after you get too many, it's hard to find them, and sometimes they move around. So after being tired of that, and I forgot how to do it, but I learned how to pin my items to the taskbar. And it's easy, and I only have to do it the one time. It's for items that I use the most. I currently have about 14 items attached to my taskbar right now, and that's prime space for me. So it makes it much easier, and when I want to turn something on, there it is. And next page, please. So there's two main ways you can do this. You pretty well have to find the app before you're going to pin it on there. You go to the start menu and right mouse click on the app that you want to put onto your taskbar. If you don't get it in the first hit, you hit more and go to the more and then put pin to taskbar. And lo and behold, your item will pop down at the bottom. Icon is already pre-made for you. It usually means something to me, and there it is. And the other way, if you already have the app already open, you can right mouse click on the, call it the little, on the taskbar for the open app. And right on there, you'll have the opportunity to pin that item to the taskbar. It saves me a lot of time, and I can open what I want right away. And I say, I've got about 14, maybe even 15 on there, and that's the ones that I use the most. And I find it very handy.
Thank you very much, Bob. That's a really useful tip. I have the icons that I want pinned to my taskbar, and I do exactly as you mentioned. Okay, Karen's asking if the SMS app is free. My understanding is that the free version is ad-supported. So if you use the free version, you get ads in some form or another. Or alternatively, I believe there's a way that you can actually pay for it and remove the adverts. I know Jeff's a big supporter of paying for things and not seeing ads, so he will have had the there you go. He says he paid $10.99 for a lifetime subscription a number of years ago. Okay, next up we have an item from Tom Trottier, and he has a Loony Link for us. Except Tom's disappeared. All right, we'll come back to that one in a minute when I see Tom back at his station. All right, a question came in, and
yeah, it looks like Tom is back.
Well, let's carry on. I don't see him, so let's carry on with this one, Chris.
Okay. Okay, so this came in by email to suggestionbox@opcug.ca, and Elizabeth noted that at last week's Q&A, on the member forum, Alan posted about a vulnerability in WebP graphics, which is, it's coming on gangbusters, I find. A lot of the graphics that are displayed on the web now are using WebP format. And in the article that Alan pointed to, it said four dangerous PC security exploits being attacked right now, one of which was the WebP graphics. Next. And then Elizabeth pointed out that the article said you should therefore immediately update any software that can read WebP graphics to the latest version number. And the article noted that browsers update frequently, and so you have no problem with web browsers. But then she asked, well, assuming that the browser is okay, how would one check for programs that read WebP graphics? And this led to a bit of a rabbit hole. Next. So I went to Microsoft Copilot, which is powered by ChatGPT-4, and I said, how do I see what programs are able to view WebP graphics? And ChatGPT came back with, to view WebP graphics on your Windows computer, you'll need an application that supports this format. Duh. And it gave some options. So Photoscape X, Pixlr Suite, Snagit, and QView. And I looked at that list and I thought, well, that's actually pretty reasonable. You know, you can go through four apps, make sure that they're up to date and that they hopefully have fixed the particular vulnerability and the viewing of WebP graphics. Next. But was that the complete answer? So the vulnerability is actually in a library, which is programming code speak for. It's a bunch of code that other programs can call to do a particular function. And so there's a library called libwebp, and it is designed to do that, just display WebP graphics. And so any program can actually use this library. It's free and open source, and they can include it in their program. So it turns out that the libwebp packages are used literally in hundreds of applications out there. So 11 web browsers, 12 social media apps, 5 video platforms, 10 graphics programs, 4 cloud storage programs, 5 e-commerce platforms, 3 content management systems, including the most popular in the world. My brain goes blank. 10 photo editors, 3 game engines, 46 desktop software programs, 3 mobile platforms, and of course, because it is a WebP library, it's actually included in dozens and dozens of developer tools and more. And there's a link there, and I will paste that into the chat as well.
So what's the CMS? Is that WordPress?
Yeah, WordPress. Yeah, there's a couple of them. Well, there's three content management systems, but WordPress is one of them, which is by far the most used content management systems on the web. Let me just pause for a second. I'm going to paste in the last couple of links that I've added here into the chat so that everybody has access to them. Okay, so next. So what's a user to do? So I just say, give it up. I mean, can you go through, you know, looking through 200 plus applications, looking to see whether they've been updated for the WebP vulnerability? So just turn off your computer. Next. Well, I can hear the people on the call. And that's not terribly helpful because you do want to use your computer. So the secret is keep all your software up to date. So in my presentation, Protecting Your PC, which I have given at the PC User Group, and I am giving it multiple times at the Ottawa Public Library. I think I've given it over 90 times so far at various branches of the Ottawa Public Library. And there are three coming up, Tuesday, February 13th at 2 p.m. at CARP, way, way out in the West End, Saturday, February 24th at 2 p.m. at Centennial, which is in the Midwest End, and Tuesday, March 5th at Sunnyside on Bank Street at 6 p.m. And so in that presentation, I cover lots and lots of material, but I also cover about vulnerability management and keeping your programs up to date. Next. Now, I looked at a number of programs, and I used to use a wonderful program called Personal Software Inspector from Secunia, and they had a free for personal use version, and it would check for thousands of programs and look to see what you have installed in your computer and look to see whether you are running a version that has a vulnerability for which a patch is available and tell you about it, and so you could get it patched and brought up to date. So it went away, and I did look at a couple of other programs, and the latest that I came across that seemed to be more reasonable is Glarisoft Software Update. And it looks pretty good. There is a free version and there's a pro version, but if you look for what is in the free version, it can check for update. Well, that's the critical thing. I wanted to be able to check to see, is there an update available? I don't particularly care about, you know, software recommendations or, you know, being able to download the update. I can go and get the update myself and so forth. So I'm quite happy with it. But if you want to spend $15, probably US, and that's at a 50% off when this happened, I suspect it probably is frequently, you could get those additional features as well. Next. So how does it work? When you have it installed, it comes up with a pretty bare bones interface, and you can read more, in which case you'd be brought to a web page talking a little bit about more stuff, but I have it a little bit off here. Normally what you would do is rescan, but when you read more, it'll actually show you the programs that it thinks are out of date on your computer. And an update is available for these four programs on my computer. Next. Now, the problem is that it doesn't necessarily say that these are going to be free updates. So, you know, it says that I'm running Snagit, you know, version 24 and version, or the, sorry, the enabled version is 22 and version 24 is available. So it's probably 2 years out of date. Now, I know that that's not going to be a free update. I also don't know if this update is going to fix a security vulnerability or it's just a new version. Same goes for TextPad. I really like TextPad as a text editor. Well, I'm out of date on that. I'm running version 7 and version 8 is available, and I know that that's not a free update. And again, I have no idea whether it's fixing security vulnerabilities or it's just new features. So Glarisoft Software Update is an update manager, not a vulnerability manager. It's not saying anything about vulnerabilities. All it's saying is that there is a newer version available. But I mean, that's helpful in itself. You could then go and look at it and decide whether you want the update, even if you can't tell whether it's fixing security vulnerabilities or not. Next. So say you've gone through all of this, and if all your programs are up to date, does that mean that your computer is safe to use and there are no vulnerabilities? Next. Not necessarily. Next. But I want to make sure that my computer is not vulnerable. You could have a case where you have a vulnerability that has not been fixed yet. And so the vendor has either not known about the vulnerability or not cared about the vulnerability or whatever. So you may have it that you're up to date on your software, but it still has a vulnerability in it. So if you want to make sure that your computer is not vulnerable, it's pretty easy. Turn off your computer, encase it in concrete, drop it in the middle of the ocean. And that's about all you can do to ensure that your computer is not going to be vulnerable to attack. Next. So seriously, just keep all your software up to date with whatever options you have available to check for updates. A lot of programs have check for updates on the help menu or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of browsers, they just push out updates automatically. So there are various ways. And then there are things like Larisoft software update, which can help you to see if you have out-of-date programs on your computer. And there are other updaters. So if anybody else has some that they use, by all means, throw it into the chat and people can try out other ones.
Natalie's asking, Chris, is it enough to rely on antivirus software that checks for program updates, such as Bitdefender?
No,
to know what needs updating.
Yeah, Bitdefender, they have a paid version, and it may have a module for checking for updates, but antivirus by itself does not check for updates on your programs, so you have to check with the documentation of the program that you use. The free antivirus programs, I don't know any of them that actually check for updates. Paid suites often will. And Natalie mentioned that hers does check, and so that's good. Tom mentions Zero Patch or OPatch as another option for checking for updates. Timothy asked, did Glarisoft have an app to fix the register? Don't use programs to fix the register. That's Microsoft actually really, really recommends against it. There are really rare circumstances where it can actually fix problems. In more cases than not, it will actually break things rather than fix things. And I do not use any program that fixes a registry. The registry fixing programs will find all kinds of things in your registry that are pointers to stuff that doesn't exist on your computer and things like that. Those are not harmful. They're just orphan pieces of fluff in your registry. It doesn't hurt at all. Registry is very efficient. And so, as I say, Microsoft, and I could do a short one on that if people wanted. Microsoft recommendation is do not use registry fixers. And I think that we are going to do, we're going to move on here.
Actually, Stuart says he always starts with the Microsoft Store library to check for updates.
Yeah, if you have a Microsoft Store app, that's a good way to do it, and you can actually set it up so that it will check automatically. I find its ability to check automatically is iffy at best, because I have it set to check for updates automatically, and often I'll go into the Microsoft Store and check manually, and all of a sudden it finds all kinds of apps that need updates. Now, maybe they were very recent updates, but maybe not. But definitely, if you have store apps, I recommend that you go into the store app, go into the library, and set it to automatically update and periodically check to see whether there are updates to your apps. Store apps are really good in that regard, in that they can update themselves pretty well.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So I see Tom is now with us again the right way round. So I'm going to see if I can get back to his slide. It looks like I can. So Tom, tell us about your Loony Link. We have to unmute your mic. There we go.
Okay. Well, Kat Mulvihill is a presenter, and basically she has a YouTube channel that helps people presenting and viewing using Zoom. pretty much. She uses some other things to help her make her presentations as well. The most interesting thing I think she found, or at least that I saw, was that you can actually have a ghost monitor on your PC. It's actually just a little plug. In fact, you know, very similar to something like this. Just a little USB-A or USB-C plug that looks like a monitor to your PC, and it's there. You can actually view it in Windows and so on. And it's useful mainly because you can use this ghost monitor to actually do your presenting and actually send this ghost monitor image off to Zoom while you have your PowerPoint presentation page with all the different pages and your notes and an image of what's there on your main screen, while on this ghost monitor, which is just this little plug, that's what's actually going out to people. She has a lot of videos on creating content in Notion as well, and some on having a teleprompter, which allows you to actually look at the camera at the same time as you're reading the text. It's actually like a 45 degree half mirror that shows what's happening on iPad or a phone or something that has actually your text on it. And so she goes through a variety of things on this. So if you want to be a better presenter than I am, which isn't hard, she will give you lots of good advice on that. Next. And so this is her YouTube channel. And
Tom, you remuted yourself.
And I'll put a link in the chat for the ghost monitor. By the way, the space bar is good for talking on Zoom, too, if you keep your finger on it. So I do suggest that if part of your job or your what you like to do is make presentations in Zoom or make presentations over, I suppose this would also work with Teams or other platforms, her video will probably help you do that, help you manage your presentations and become a better presenter. So I do suggest her. And I believe she lives in Toronto or at least in Southern Ontario near Toronto. There she is.
Okay, thanks very much, Tom, for that. I'm going to try and switch back to the next slide. That's not the right one. Let's try 29. There we go. Okay, so following up on what Chris was talking about, PSI, the Secunia Personal Security Inspector, I too used to use that on Chris's recommendation and found it very useful. I also used the software update monitor, Sumo, for quite a while until they discontinued that. So the question is, are there any free vulnerability scanners anymore? And Chris had mentioned some time ago that the team that had developed PSI was actually working on what was going to be a free vulnerability scanner called VulnDetect. But it didn't really come to fruition, apparently. But it turns out there is a website, and there's the URL for it. However, personally, I found the website really confusing, but I'll show you what I found out this afternoon. So first of all, you get a list of various posts, and I got down to this one down here, which said the agent version 3.2.0.0 is recommended, and there's a preview dated 24/01/22, so that's basically this January, just a couple of weeks ago. However, the thing that confused me is that the date right here is October 4th, 2018. So don't quite understand that. So you dig into the actual post a little bit. It's still confusing. It says here that version 3.3.0 is available, and that's dated December the 6th of last year. And yet, further on in the page, version 3.3.2, which should be a later version, the posting for that is dated October the 4th, 2018. So I really have no idea what these posts are trying to tell me. However, at the bottom of the page, there's a link which says download the personal edition of Voldy Tech, which is an alternative to Secunia PSI. So if you click on this link, it actually points to this setup program right here. And when you install that setup program, you actually get a version of Voldy Tech installed, which is actually version 3.2. And so if you remember the post back there, 3.3 was a tech preview. And I imagine that means that 3.2 is the recommended or current release version. So we can install the program. The installation is straightforward. You end up with a wizard. You have to give it an email address, and it tells you that further instructions will be sent to this supplied email address. So I gave it my OPCUG address and waited and couldn't see anything, looked in the spam folder, couldn't find anything. But eventually I decided, well, I'll try and log on anyway. So I try to log on. I'm going to give it my email address. The problem is now it wants a password. So it didn't send any instructions to the email address I gave it, and neither did it send me a password. So I have a little problem. However, down here, you notice that there's this forgot password link. So I thought, what the hell? I don't have a password. Let's tell it I forgot it. And sure enough, it sends me an email and asks me to reset my password. So I did that. And now it lets me return to the login page. So I can log in. And then when I log in, I get this this browser window. It logs into a browser. So URL on a browser. I'm on the vulndetect.com website. Clearly, I'm using the personal edition, and it looks like I want to click on inspect this computer. So I click on inspect this computer, and it tells me inspection pending, which is fine, except that's all it tells me. And it tells me that forever, I think. It never seemed to change. Remember, I don't have any instructions on how to run this beast, so I don't really know what it wants. But nothing was happening. I tried refreshing the page, goes back to inspect this computer. I can never get away from this inspection pending. However, I did notice that we have this hamburger menu up here, which usually means there's something available to look at. So if I click on that, I can have a look at the configuration. And when I scroll down the configuration, I found that it's set to run the inspections any day of the week, but it didn't have a time. So I put in a time which was 2 minutes after I was looking at this thing, just to see what happens, because it says inspections will run at this time on each selected day. So I imagine that means that if I had instructions, it would tell me I had to set the time. Once I set the time, then it's going to run this vulnerability inspection every day at 3:20 in the afternoon. So sure enough, a few minutes after 3:20, I could go back and look at the applications. And you can see I've got all kinds of applications which it's gone through. First one is Microsoft Silverlight, which I thought was weird because I thought I'd disabled or uninstalled Silverlight because it's already at end of life, which it tells me right here. It's at end of life. I've got DOSBox installed. I've got GIMP installed. And I know that I haven't updated either of those. I don't update them all that regularly, certainly not DOSBox. It works fine with the version I have. GIMP gave me a problem one time when I updated it, so I don't normally update it every 5 minutes. So I wasn't surprised that those were supposedly insecure. However, it also tells me that the Everything utility, which is a really nice search utility, much better than the Windows search utility, and FileZilla, which is an FTP client, it tells me that both of those are insecure. And I found that odd, because this afternoon, and yesterday, on the 6th of February, here's an entry from my computer management log. I actually played around with another update manager called PatchMyPC, the home updater version. And when I ran PatchMyPC, it showed me a whole bunch of programs that I do use quite often that were out of date. So I updated some of them. And one of them, you'll notice, is I updated Everything to the current version, 1.4.1, 1024, as of the 6th of February. And sure enough, here is everything running. I've hit the help icon here, and it's showing me that I do, in fact, have build 1024 installed as of yesterday afternoon. When I look at FileZilla, I'm running, this again is looking at the help menu on FileZilla, I'm running 3.66.4. And sure enough, if I check the updates, there is in fact a new version available, 3.66.5. So I'm thinking that I'm getting mixed results from this vulnerability detection program. It's kind of telling me that everything is out of date when it's not, and FileZilla is out of date when it is. So hence, I'm thinking I've got mixed results. But then I started looking further down the list of applications, and I found that I'm starting to see the same program being repeated later on in the list. And you notice here that I've got DOSBox and DOSBox. But you notice I've got version 0.74 and 0.74-3. 0.74-0 is insecure, so it needs an update. But 0.74-3 is the current version, and that's okay. And sure enough, if I look in the management program control panel and look at the install, actually this is looking at File Explorer and just looking in the program files directory for Windows. And you can see that I do, in fact, have two versions of DOSBox installed, 0.74 and 74-3. So that is, in fact, correct then. Vulnerable Detect is telling me the truth. This one's out of date and this one's current. And it turns out I've got exactly the same problem with Everything. I have two versions of Everything installed. Normally when you update a program, it blows away the old version. Everything doesn't do that. If you install a new version of Everything, it just installs a new version and leaves the old version there. So again, I do actually have two versions of Everything installed on my system. This 1022 build is out of date, and the 1024 build is actually correct. So that's kind of work in progress. I haven't played around with it any more than that. This is a true vulnerability scanner. It also has the option here. One of these icons will show you the URL of the website, and the other icon will actually download the update that you need to fix the insecurity. As I say, I haven't played with it yet any more than that. But if you're interested in a vulnerability scanner, and you can work your way through all these strange happenings on the website, you can probably download this and play with it and see how well it works. I'm sure Chris is going to do that, tell us all about it at some point in the future.
One thing I think that, as I recall, I did play around with Vuln Detect a couple of years ago. And you see that triangle to the left of each of the entries. If you actually click on that, I think it'll tell you where the version is that they actually found it. And not only that, as I recall, they would actually find install programs like setup.exe for a program that was a vulnerable version, even if it wasn't installed. So if you download, you know, the installation routine for a program and then you just leave it lying around, Vuln Detect would end up finding it even though it's not necessarily installed on your computer. So it's important to click on that triangle to the left of each of the entries that you're interested in finding out about and check to see what it is that or where it is that it actually found it. And if it's just in a setup program, just go and delete that setup program. If, like DustBox, it actually installs multiple versions, then you have to try and figure out how to uninstall the older version of it. You may have multiple entries in the settings apps list, and you can pick out the one that is the older version and uninstall it. If you only see one entry there, which is possible, I suppose, then you have to figure out how to get rid of that older version. Now, the older version is probably never going to be called automatically because your system will be updated so that any icons are pointing to the newer version for sure. And so is there any harm in having an older version that's vulnerable lying around if it never gets executed? Probably not. You could probably, in worst case scenario, just go into program files x86, DOSBox, and, you know, just blow away that directory of the old one without any harm if there is no uninstall routine specifically for that version. I found that overall, Vuln Detect, I think it does a very good job. The problem with it is that it is confusing. It's a bunch of volunteers that are doing this, and they don't seem to be all that interested in spending a lot of time in making this easier to understand.
Maybe so they should volunteer to do the documentation for them.
Go for it, Alan.
So Jocelyn is saying, echoing your comments, Chris, should you remove the older version to avoid the insecurity, or the insecure message, and also save space? And I agree with Jocelyn, you should indeed remove the old version, mainly to save space. And that's in fact what I've done with that everything program.
And
it does show up twice in control panel, and I can uninstall one of them, or I did uninstall one of them using the link to uninstall.
And Alan, to follow up with
this is
you.
Right, something like DOSBox. Sorry, Chris, yeah. I think DOSBox doesn't install. And I just blow away
the directory
for it.
Yeah. Okay. When you were going through earlier on, you were saying how things like GIMP, you said, well, yeah, you don't update it all the time. Keep in mind that this is a vulnerability detector, not an update manager. So it is saying that the version you got installed has a security vulnerability. So if you have security vulnerabilities in any of the software on your computer and it's easy to get rid of that by updating to the latest version and GIMP is free, I would certainly encourage people to pay attention to anything here that is listed as insecure and do something about it, because they are security vulnerabilities. It's not just a new version.
Yeah, good point, Chris. I actually didn't update GIMP very regularly because I got caught out with one update that didn't work very well.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had to roll back to an older version, and then I never trusted any of the newer versions. But you're right. I should run a vulnerability scanner and take careful note of what it's talking about. So I'll go through that list in a bit more detail. Okay, so we're almost at the last 10, which is good because that's what we're up to. We've run out of prepared topics, so if anybody has any questions or comments or wants to share information, now is the time. Put it in the chat window. Open up your microphone, talk to us, whatever you like. Karen's asking if there's no AI-generated topic this week. It turns out that was such a good presentation, we've organized it to be the April monthly meeting. So, no, we're not going to present it this week, but you'll see it in glorious Technicolor in more than its full sun state in April.
Yeah, it's a great deck. Alan and I both looked at the deck that Bob Harris had prepared and said, wow, this is way too much for Q&A, so we could either split it into multiple Q&As, or better yet, seeing as we still didn't have a speaker for the April general meeting, we booked Bob into that, and he agreed. So stay tuned for that. It'll be a really good presentation for sure.
And to follow up on that, we are looking for speakers for our monthly meetings. We're looking for articles for the newsletter. We're looking for questions for Q&A. We're looking for shares for Q&A. We're looking for a director for the board of directors. And if any of the above appeal, let us know.
Thank you for the words, Alan and Chris. And a question for Tom. I don't understand the ghost monitor. What that, the ghost plug, whatever. I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either, but it works.
What's the function? How would that?
Well, for example, when you're present, when you're presenting using PowerPoint, you could you can have your screen be the presenter screen, and then the other screen, which you would show on the wall behind you, would be the screen that has all the slides.
Right.
Well, with a ghost monitor dongle, you can plug in the ghost monitor dongle, and now you have a kind of a virtual screen there that's on the wall, except that, well, you can't see it, but other people can see it, because you can actually point Zoom to that screen as being the screen that you want to share. And I would presume it works in Microsoft Teams and other things as well. So it's a virtual monitor that is there that you can't see, but which other people can see if you if you're in some kind of group meeting like this.
Okay, thank you. You buy those things like on Amazon, do you, or something? Or
yeah, you can get them on Amazon. I was just looking, and they're under $8 a piece.
Wow.
I presume if you buy them on eBay, they're about $1.50.
We have a question from Karen saying, does anyone use Canva and can do an intro presentation? So if we have any Canva users out there, which is presentation material, or presentation software, and you want to give a short intro to it, talk about its benefits and any problems you have with it, by all means, send in a note to suggestion box at opcug.ca.
I believe Kat has some videos on that. Kat Mulvihill?
Yeah.
If you look it up.
There you go, Karen. You can look it up, and then you can do the presentation. I'm not seeing any response from Karen.
I think when you use the background remover, and then you go to edit your video, it takes you a little bit to Canva. I don't know much about it, but I think I've used it a bit to put a different background in the image that I initially started to work with.
Okay, if I could jump in and take two steps back to the software update thing. Something I found really helpful for keeping my Brave browser updated is just looking at the subreddit for it, because the creators of Brave, the authors, instantly post when they issue an update. So while I'm doing general computer software checks, maybe once or twice a day, I don't automate it because it never works right for me. I just do it manually when I think of it. But I go into Reddit many times a day, and the subreddit says, boom, release, and it tells me exactly when, and I can go and update the program instantly. And it's kind of helpful because patch my PC always has a conflict when it goes to update Brave. It's just, it always turns into a mess. but anyway, there may be some other high volume subreddits for various programs people use that can be useful that way. Users yapping away about what they're doing. Gosh, what a concept. Anyway, it's a way of learning of an update.
Well, Justin has an interesting question. He wants to record a selfie, but he's not sure how to do it using Windows. Does anybody have any suggestions?
A selfie?
Yeah, how would you take a... Well, you could use... you could take it using your webcam.
Yeah.
Normally the software that drives the webcam has an option to take screenshots. Harvey says use the camera app. I don't know what you mean the webcam, or is there actually a camera app somewhere?
Windows has a app, it's called Camera. If you type that in, you'll see it come up and just click on it, and you will then see yourself through your webcam, and you can do the shots, take photos.
Yeah.
Perfect. Right. You're right. I just tried it, and there is a camera app.
Every time I turn on the camera app, I frighten myself. So.
You're looking pretty
scared
right now.
Webcam question mark. Does that mean Justin doesn't have a webcam?
Uh-oh.
Well, the only webcam I have is on Zoom, I guess. But I could not see how to record anything using Zoom.
The camera app will record you if you want to send. You can package it up in an MP4 or something and send it off to people. That's what it does.
But I found it, but I could record a little video, but I could not find how to save the video afterward. It does appear on the video appears as an icon. You can play it, but I could not find how to save the thing.
So, Justin, are you trying to make a video or a still photograph?
A little video. It was just one
video.
Yeah, I just wanted to have a little selfie of maybe a 30-second type of thing. And it's with a cell phone, it's relatively easy, but under Windows, I could not see how to do it.
By the way, someone asked webcam. I don't know how to save it in camera, but for a webcam is usually most laptops have a webcam in there, and they're used for Zoom, they're for used for messaging and not for FaceTime. They're used for FaceTime on Apple computers, but you can talk to people back and forth in Skype and I think WhatsApp as well. So that's what the webcam is. You can also buy exterior webcams, which is what I'm using. I have a Logitech 920, which is, I guess, one of the earlier full HD webcams, and provides the picture that you see now. And it's a good webcam. You can buy them full HD webcams now for $20. So if you don't have a webcam for your computer, and the webcams usually mount to the top of your monitor, and they're good
for example, for Zoom, there is there's a cam on it, but I, using Zoom, I don't see how you can record a little selfie and save it.
I don't think you can in Zoom record the video. Unless you're running the show. But I think with camera, I think if you record something and then you can play it back, I don't know why you wouldn't be able to save it. But I don't know. There's probably a bunch of other apps which you could use to record yourself and save it. Even VLC, I think, probably could do that.
I paste it into the chat that SysInternal Zoom It tool can record video. So you could bring up whatever, like the camera app or whatever, have it showing the video, and then you could tell Zoom It you want to record that portion of the screen and then save it as an MP4.
Okay. We'll give it a try. Thank you.
And you have to report back, Jocelyn, with a demo.
That Zoom It is on the SysInternals.
Yeah.
If you Google SysInternals, one word, and Zoom It, one word, you'll find it.
Okay, I will have a look. Thank you.
Bob's trying to sell us a drone. I don't think that's a Windows solution, though, Bob.
No, it's good for selfies, though, and it's not really a drone. It pulls up in your pocket, and then it'll fly 20 minutes. It'll fly behind you or 10 feet away as you walk around outside, and your voice will be heard over the motors. It takes the motor sound out. So if you want to talk to somebody for your video, expensive though.
That would be a cool kind of way to talk to people as you walk.
Exactly. That's very impressive when you see it in use. And most drones can't hear you because of the whizzing sound of the motors. This drone attaches to your cell phone and uses them. So I think using the microphone on your phone, and you can put it in your pocket and then go somewhere else, change the battery. Expensive.
Which drone is this?
We go to it's called the Hover1.com. It's on Amazon too.
Just what we need. But can you extend it to a full OPC UG meeting?
I think it's off topic here.
I don't know. Look at Chris's background.
Okay, we're almost at the witching hour, so let me just change the slide here and remind you that next week is our February meeting. February the 14th, and we're going to be hearing from Tom again, and this time he's going to be talking about how he uses ChatGPT to actually create programs using Python. So that, and this is his first Python program, so it should be interesting to find out how well he does. And I noticed in the user forum, he was asking people if they had any programs that they thought they would like, and he was offering to try and develop them using this technology. So that's something for you to think about. So February the 14th next week is our ChatGPT and Python monthly meeting. And I know that's going to break everybody's heart on Valentine's Day, because that means that we will not have a Q&A session next week. Our next Q&A, therefore, will be on in 2 weeks on February the 21st, which gives you lots of time to check out how to do selfies in Windows, and for Karen to produce her video. And if you have questions or if you have topics that you'd like to share, as always, please send us a note to suggestion box at opcug.ca. And we'll be more than happy to add you to the agenda. And that's all we have for tonight. So I hope everybody found it interesting. Lots of good stuff. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. See you next week at the main monthly meeting. Don't forget, it's the AGM as well. We'll be starting off the meeting with our AGM. So the first 10 to 15 minutes will be that. And then we'll be handing it over to Tom for his presentation.